Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with. The Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
Okay, on that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is a Reverend Greg Richter from the Grace Lutheran Church in St. Paul. Good afternoon.
Afternoon. Good to see you.
See you again. Yeah.
Well, my dear people, I was just sitting in the back room here, and one of your colleagues said that she was hoping to hit her stride by this afternoon, and it, the late nights you're keeping, I guess it takes a few hours to catch that point in the day, but made me think that you are approaching the finish line, or at least you can see it from where you are. And if you ran for a track team or something like that, you know that it was, you finish that last turn and it's just a straight run towards the finish line. Well, it's more like you're in a sack race than on your own. And if it was just one of you running, you'd make it fine. But there's a governor in the bag, and there are representatives in the bag, and there are senators, and you're all trying to jump and hop to that line in unison, and that's not an easy thing to do. But with that in mind, let's pray. Great God, I have the greatest confidence in these people, and so do the residents of this state. If one of them, by herself or by himself, was to figure these things out, they'd be done on time. And granted, there would be a fair amount of criticism at the end, but they're all gifted people, and they all have the best interests of this state in mind. It's just that we've devised a system where they all have to get there together, and that's not easy. So I pray for patience, pray for discernment, the ability to compromise. Help them to bear up in these last hours and days, that they might work together and do their best. And though they might not all agree, we will get there. So guide us on our way. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Wish you well.
Thank you.
Yep.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Folby, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Hua, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith return. Senate file numbers 284 and 1890, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House and on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate files. 477, a bill for enacting the solid waste requiring a pilot program to be implemented by paint manufacturers. There has been appointed as such a committee on the part of the House. Representatives Saylor, Simon, and McNamara. Senate File 477 is herewith returned to the Senate. And Senate File 489, a conference committee of three members. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. Representatives Davney, Doty, and Coles. Senate File 489 is herewith returned to the Senate. And on Senate File 1447, a bill for enacting the Human Services, making changes to licensing provisions. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. Representatives Abler, Tau, and Lesh. Senate File 1447 is herewith returned to the Senate. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee of consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House to the following Senate File 1477, a bill for enacting a construction code. There has been appointed as such committee on the part of the House Representatives Seifert, Junkie, and Conan. Senate File 1477 is herewith returned to the Senate. These are all signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. The next message is on House File 417, Senator Bach. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File 417, a bill for an act relating to commerce prohibiting certain claims processing practices by third-party administrators of health coverage plans. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of three members be appointed thereon. Representatives Atkins, Johnson, and Smith have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 417 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Pogermiller.
Thank you, Mr. President. On behalf of Senator Bach, I move that the Senate accede to the request of a House of a Conference Committee on House File 417 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Okay, on that motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Tony.
The next message is on House File 1760, Senator Lorie. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File 1760, a bill for an act relating to human services, changing provisions for long-term care. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of five members be appointed thereon. Representatives Thiessen, Rood, Bunn, Fritz,
almost
and Kelly
succeeded.
Have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House.
Very good.
House File 1760 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint
Chamber
a like committee.
Really
signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Just going.
Senator Lorie.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 1760 and the conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the Lorie motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Turn, the teachers would get...
The next message is on House File 2251, Senator Cohen. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File 2251, a bill for an act relating to state government finance, providing federal stimulus oversight funding for certain state agencies. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of five members be appointed thereon. Representatives Solberg, Carlson, Faust, Brinert, and Howes have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 2251 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Pogermiller.
Thank you, Mr. President. On behalf of Senator Cohen, I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 2251, that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
$100 million would be $10 million. Right.
And Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 2082 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 2082, a bill for enacting the government operations, modifying provisions for general legislative and administrative expenses of state government. Senate File 2082 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Only raise each one 0.25%. So in the end, so in the end we have a 1% increase on the employee.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House file numbers 535, 1276, and this one not on your agenda, House File 1132, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
$100 million, the district's wide. But my argument is that, as they said, well, what's the benefit for the teachers then? The benefit.
Okay, we're on first reading of House bills.
Yeah.
You don't have.
Pretty small is right.
There's one to be read at the desk.
House File 1132, a bill for enacting the natural resources, modifying refund provisions, etc.
This House File 1132 will be referred to the Finance Committee. Without objection, the others will be first reading of House bills. They will be referred to the committees as indicated. First reading. The next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Pogorek.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next order of business, second reading of House bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. The next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are three printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is motions and resolutions. There's one, two, three, four resolutions on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be referred to the Rules Committee. Senator. Oh, yes, we have Senator Fulby, do you have, do you report?
Thank you, Mr. President. Having voted on the prevailing side, I move that the vote whereby House File Number 1275 was passed by the Senate on May 13, 2009, be now reconsidered.
Okay, tell the body what we're doing here before we vote on your...
Okay, thanks, Mr. President. There was a one-word difference in the reviser's office, so it didn't go through as an exact copy. On line 9.31, at the end of the sentence, just the word A in the Senate file is there, with on line 9.32, person following. And on the House file, they put both the words a person on 9.31 instead of carrying person down to line 0.32.
All right. On the motion to reconsider, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We have before us House File 1275. You want her right away? Senator Fulby.
Mr. President, I move that the amendment made to House File Number 1275 by the Committee on Rules and Administration in the report adopted May 6, 2009, pursuant to Rule 45, be stricken.
Okay, on that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 1275, a bill for an act relating to environment, modifying sewage treatment systems, provisions, etc.
Secretary, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I just can't stand not being able to comment on the PCA, and I'd love to tell people to not vote for this, but you know, you guys already know you're going to vote for it. Just yesterday, members, I had another conversation with the assistant commissioner of the PCA, and the way those people treat me is an abomination. And I, you know, if I had my druthers today so that they can hear this, I would abolish the PCA or at least get rid of some of the commissioners that want to treat people that way. But once again, members, I just want to keep letting you know every time I got to go through this that, you know, as the only licensed pollution control agency, septic designer, installer, inspector in the legislature, I'm still appalled that they want to sneak this stuff under the radar screen. They don't ever want me involved. And as a person that represents and is in a group of 70% of the individuals that deal in this business that don't get a voice in making these rules, I'm appalled at the process the PCA does. However, whatever they want to do, you guys vote for it. I'm voting against it.
Okay, on your desk is the vote from yesterday on this issue. So, Secretary, we'll take the roll. All senators, having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. Are being 39 ayes, 17 nays. Bill is passed. Its title agreed to. Remaining under motions, there's an author's motion to read.
Senator Murphy moved that the name of Senator Dill be added as a co-author to Senate File Number 42.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogrommiller.
Mr. President, members, the plan is to take a brief recess now. The plan for today is to process the noon list of, it looks like, about 10 bills and take up the confirmation calendar. When we come back from caucus, we'll take up the confirmation calendar for Public Utilities, Lessard Heritage, Tax Court, Notaries Public, and Board on Judicial Standards. We'll do that right after caucus. Those should go very quickly. And then we'll take up this general orders calendar. It would be nice to be done by 3 o'clock today if we could. And so it'd be nice to process these bills. So Senator Senjum, hopefully, or Senator Fischbach, hopefully a relatively brief caucus. The majority will be in the retiring room.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, the Republicans will caucus in room 112.
Senator Corey.
Well.
Where are you caucusing?
Well, I was going to go back and sit in the retiring room and say to myself, I'm not going to move until I'm carried out feet first, but I guess I don't feel that ornery today, so I guess I'll just let it go.
Okay, that the motion... It's for a recess to the call of the chair. On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I know that you wanted to make a brief announcement with regards to a special guest that you have today that members who are friends of may want to stay for. Did you want to do that now?
Yeah, that's fine. We've got a very distinguished person in the balcony, Dick Anfang, good friend of mine. we'd like to just say hello to him. He's coming down to the floor in a few minutes, so if you want to see, he's retiring, I believe, July 31st. Been in the labor movement all his life and has been a good friend. And what a little thing that's a little unusual about Dick is that he's also a member of the Chamber of Commerce, so I think that's a rarity with the... But anyway, he'll be down on the floor in a minute. Senate's in recess. Senator Pogamiller.
President, I move that further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with. The Sergeant-at-Arms bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogamiller.
Under motions, I think we could take up the confirmation calendar and deal with the Public Utilities Commission, Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council, the Tax Court, Notaries Public, and Board on Judicial Standards. And I would yield to Senator Moa.
You have those motions for me? Senator Moa.
Mr. President, I move that the appointments of Notaries Public received May 13, 2009 be taken from the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Moa.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do now consent to and confirm the appointments of the Notaries Public.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Is there anything to explain? You're just proving the notary publics and
a list is.
It's a mile long.
Mile long has okay. Been printed, it's been submitted into the record.
She has to say. On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President. I move that the report from the Committee on Judiciary reported May 13, 2009, pertaining to the appointments to the Board on Judicial Standards be taken from the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Moa.
Mr. President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Judiciary reported May 13, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Mr. Douglas A. Fuller and Mr. Patrick D. Sexton, both as public members to the Board on Judicial Standards.
Okay. On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. That's good.
Mr. President,
Senator,
I yield to Senator Chaudhry then for Heritage Council.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I think we're waiting for some more copies. We'll pass some out now of the appointments. I move that the report from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources reported May 4, 2009, pertaining appointments to the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council be taken from the table. I'm sorry, I've already moved that and that prevailed.
Oh, that's okay, that's the first motion. On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry.
And I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry.
And Mr. President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources reported May 4, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of James Cox, Wayne Enger, Scott Rawl, and Robert Schroeder to the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council. Mr. President, members, we are passing out the background information on these individuals. This is the first time we are taking up confirmations for these positions because the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council was just created last year. These are the governor's appointments to the council, the citizen appointments to the council. There are other citizens on the council that were appointed by the majority leader and the Speaker of the House. But these are the four that are in our charge to confirm. So this is the first time we have the opportunity to confirm these individuals. The committee had a thorough, fruitful, and meaningful discussion on with these individuals regarding their role on the Outdoor Heritage Council, their background that they bring to the work of the council, and general philosophies and future of council activities. The committee voted unanimously on a voice vote to recommend confirmation of these individuals. Each one brings experience and background in conservation activities to the council, which is required by statute. All of them had very positive viewpoints about the role of the council and the role that they have in making recommendations on using the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which was part of the new legacy amendment. This is just for members' edification. This is the one-third of the new legacy dollars that these people are tasked with making recommendations on. So I will be happy to stand for any questions. We felt that these were impressive individuals. They are, in general, geographically balanced and bring a variety of experiences in terms of conservation activities, both in the private and the public sector and nonprofit sector. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Question, Senator Chaudhry renews his motion to confirm the appointments of these four people to the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Excuse me, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple comments. As you know, I sit on this council, and the list of members on the board here are and have shown to be, certainly, as Senator Chaudhry said, tremendous amount of experience in the environmental and restoration projects that we dealt with, and these people really know what's going on with the environment, and I certainly support their confirmations here today. Thank you.
Okay. On the confirmation motion by Senator Chaudhry, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. These members are confirmed. Senator Rosen. Okay, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the appointment to the Public Utilities Commission be taken from the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed.
Aye.
Motion prevails. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications, reported April 23, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of J. Dennis O'Brien from Ramsey County, effective February 7, 2008, for a term expiring on January 6, 2014. Mr. President, I would like to say a few words.
Okay.
And normally, Senator Prettner-Solon would be here giving this recommendation, but she is ill, and that's unusual for her. So I'm honored to, and it's a pleasure to speak on behalf of Dennis O'Brien. The Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee voted on April 21st to recommend Dennis O'Brien for confirmation for a six-year term to the PUC to expire on January 6th of 2014. Commissioner O'Brien's background is in labor relations, believe it or not. He started his career as a special assistant district attorney and has extensive knowledge in education law, employment matters, and collective bargaining. But frankly, his public service has been his entire life. And I have no doubt that he will be thoughtful and diligent with his work at the PUC, and he'll be a leader for Minnesota's promising future in our energy policy. So I encourage you to help support his confirmation today.
Okay, Senator Rosen renews her motion to consent and confirm the appointment of J. Dennis O'Brien as a Public Utilities Commissioner. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Bach, do you have a Confirmation.
Mr. President, I move that the report from the Committee on Taxes, dated May 7th, 2009, pertaining to the appointment of the tax court, be taken from the table and
from the table. On the Bach motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prepared. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Taxes dated May 7, 2009, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of Cheryl A. Ramstead to the tax court judge.
Okay. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, we had Judge Ramstead in the tax committee. She clearly enjoys the work that she does, and we believe she conducts herself in a very professional way, and we highly recommended her confirmation.
Okay. Senator Bach renews his motion to consent and confirm the appointment of Cheryl Ramstead as tax court judge. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. You, Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, then, remain on motions. I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into committee of the whole for the purpose of taking up the general orders calendar.
Okay. On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to designate number 78 on general orders, number 80, number 81, number 82, 68, number 1, number 71, number 21, number 2, number 40, number 58, number 86, number 89, and number 82. 92. There's a new. It's a noon list on your desk, and I would yield to Senator Rest.
The first bill on general orders is number 78 on general orders, Senate File 1708, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File number 1708 be recommended to pass.
Senator Rest, discussion on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 1708 is a resolution to our congressional delegation to support the so-called Federal Main Street Fairness Act, which would give those states that comply with the streamlined sales and use tax agreement the authority to require all sellers, regardless of nexus, to collect those states' sales and use taxes, which they are currently not able to do. There are 23 states that have complied with the agreement, and this has been requested by the NCSL Executive Committee Task Force on State and Local Government Taxation and Electronic Commerce.
Senator Rest renews her motion on the resolution. All those in any discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator, the next bill we're going to discuss this afternoon, number 80 on general orders, Senate File 358, Senator Dahl. Kevin.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 358 be recommended to pass.
Hey, Senator Dahl, discussion on your resolution.
This, Mr. Chair and members, is a resolution that would ask that we not reauthorize the No Child Left Behind Act in its current form. Some of the debate is going on right now with Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, and of course the Obama administration. I know Senator Klobuchar has been holding listening sessions about the No Child Left Behind Act. I know that the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, has also been going around the nation talking about the No Child Left Behind Act. The resolution, of course, talks about some of the shortfalls of the No Child Left Behind Act in terms of average yearly progress and the impossible goals that schools are asked to achieve in terms of testing and the AYP, also how we kind of leave behind some people with disabilities who are not able to take a test, in some cases not even able to read, but are still counted in terms of AYP. Again, I think given the fact that Congress will be debating this issue this fall, they tried to take a stab at it in 2007 and were not able to revise the act. I think it's a decent approach just to tell Congress that we do have some concerns about the No Child Left Behind in its current form. I ask you to support the resolution.
Okay, on the Dahl resolution, Senator Rosen and Senator Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would the author yield, please?
The author will yield.
Senator Dahl, I was just wondering what precipitated this bill, the necessity for something like this, why it has to be a law, and are other states doing this? I mean, can't this just die and... It's just going to die. I think the issue that needs to be addressed, though, still in our schools is the accountability issue. Now, I will say that I am not a big fan of No Child Left Behind, but I do feel it's a little disingenuous.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm glad you asked that question. Again, this is just a resolution asking Congress to reconsider No Child Left Behind in its current form. Actually, as a representative of Minnesota, I did receive from schools. There are over 80 school districts in Minnesota that have also signed similar resolutions. I got a copy of the resolution signed by over 80 school districts saying that the No Child Left Behind Act is a collection of 93 disjointed programs that would better serve children if organized to provide a seamless array of services. They also actually are kind of opposed to more federal control, should be left more to the states. They think that standards and accountability systems are best assigned, again, at the local level rather than the federal level. And Arne Duncan said that the goals of the No Child Left Behind are very loose, but how we get there are very tight and very prescriptive. And so, again, some tinkering with the No Child Left Behind, I think, by Congress, I think is best served.
Senator Salzman.
And on that same point, Mr. Chair, I understand everyone's frustration with No Child Left Behind, but having just sat through a conference committee on education and having spent 5 months looking at what we could build on in this state in terms of reform and the pushback from the status quo of not being willing to look at those programs that are most effective in serving our young people is very disturbing to me. So I appreciate this particular resolution, but I think what we should be also doing is, instead of saying what doesn't work and always being quick to point out what's not working, is putting a resolution together of what we are willing to do to really improve student achievement. I'm very discouraged by the conversations that, as we brought forward programs regarding alternative teacher preparation programs and looking at our early intervention programs and seeing the pushback, is very troubling to me. So I hope that as this body moves forward, we are quick to always say what doesn't work. I think we need to also be looking at what does, and it's not necessarily just additional resources.
Senator Bonif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not so certain about this resolution, Senator Dahl, because I carried actually something similar to this. I think it was just last year, and that was when we had a different administration and a different commissioner of education, and I was strongly opposed to the interpretation of the No Child Left Behind Act as we knew it. And felt very strongly about it. I happen to be very hopeful and optimistic about the new Secretary of Education, Arnie Duncan. I think that from what I can see, he is really all about transformation of the educational system in our country. And so I want to give him every opportunity to draft what his agenda and the agenda as this administration has a vision for in terms of what that might look like. And so I would hate for us to, until we've had a chance to find out what it is they believe this act ought to be and what is their vision, for us to come forward with a resolution that says we're opposed. I would rather have a dialogue with the administration, and I actually have done that. I've put calls into the secretary and plan to have an ongoing dialogue with the administration with regard to education. I sit on the NCSL Standing Committee on Education. So I'm not ready to take this step. I appreciate, Senator Dahl, that you brought it forward based on what No Child Left Behind has been and the punitive nature of it and what it's cost our schools and our children. I just don't yet know about our future.
Further discussion, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do support this this resolution, and I don't think any of us members today think that this is going to carry a lot of weight. We had a little bit of discussion in the Education Committee earlier this year, and, you know, what does Congress really do with these resolutions? But it's worth putting a stamp on it, and it's worth having a little discussion on the floor, and I would hope as we move into next session that we can have a more committee discussion and action that comes from this topic. I think what brings us together, members, and I appreciate Senator Bonhoff and Senator Saltzman's comments, and Senator Dahl, you're taking the time to author this, is our belief in local control and our belief in local school boards and teachers and principals. And Senator Bonhoff, I worry that some of us may have renewed confidence in Washington, D.C., and some of us may have less. And we can't have this back and forth every 4 years, every new administration, every new Secretary of Education. I think what brings the Minnesota Senate and the legislature together is a belief in local control, a local control of our schools. And I worry that we will rue the day that we got so much money from Washington, D.C. for education, because with that money comes control and red tape, and I think No Child Left Behind is an example of that, So I think I appreciate the passions and the energy that this topic brings forward. We know we hear about it from all of our schools and all of our teachers and our kids who are just tested and tested and tested. Accountability is great, and we need that, but we can build that here in Minnesota, not 1,000 miles away.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, and again, I urge your support on this. The No Child Left Behind Act, written in 2001, I don't think they got it right the first time. Again, we're just asking not to reauthorize the act in its current form. More than a third of schools failed to meet AYP goals last year, and I think, again, we can tweak this until we get it right, including reform, including a better system, including better funding and accountability.
Further discussion, Senator Dahl renews his motion. When this committee do arise, Senate Resolution 358 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Chair's in doubt. All those in favor, please rise. Leroy. Time up. Okay, you may be seated that the resolution prevails. The next bill on general orders is another resolution, number 81 on general orders, Senate File 1778, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1778 be recommended to pass.
Okay, Senator Scheid, discussion on your resolution.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a resolution. It is a resolution that is supported by the NCSL, the NCOIL, which is the National Council Conference of Insurance Legislators, and the Council on State Governments. And they have joined to express their concern over the possibility in recent years. There's been discussion of having an optional federal charter for insurance companies. And I think you all know that insurance is regulated by the states. I've had handed out a little cartoon of why it probably isn't a good idea for Washington to consider taking over insurance companies at this time. Now, some very large insurance companies would like to have this option. I think it's important for us to regulate at the state level. Our constituents shouldn't have to deal with Washington with their insurance concerns, and I assume that you have people contacting you about that as well. Certainly our Attorney General and the Department of Commerce do. The states can be, and I would argue they are more responsive. Additionally, our state realizes over $350 million a year in premium taxes, fees, and assessments. And I think we're even using some of our insurance companies' reserves to help with some of the initiatives that, in particularly in business development, that might well not be there if we lose the regulatory power over insurance. So you might recall the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Compact of 3 years ago. The need for that was that states do need to streamline and modernize, and I think we are. I would ask for your support of this resolution. Thank you.
Discussion on the resolution, Senator Vandiver.
Well, Senator Scheid yield.
She will yield.
Thank you, Senator Scheid. So this is about a preference as to whether the state would have more control over regulations of insurance than the federal government. Is that
Senator
accurate?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Senator Vandiver. I think it was the McCarran-Ferguson Act in Congress that led to state regulation of insurance. But there, as I said, in the last few years, there has been a movement in Washington and increasing discussion about the federal government taking over the regulation, and I don't want that to happen.
Well, members, I think after watching the federal government in action, I think there's no doubt that we can. I think that it's clear that we can't do worse than them. At least we haven't yet, so we should support this resolution.
Further discussion on resolution number 1778. Seeing none, Senator Scheid renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1778 resolution be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders this afternoon, number 82 on general orders, Senate File 133, Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, when this committee do arise, I move that Senate File 133 be recommended to pass.
Okay, Senator Dill, tell the committee about the bill, please.
This is a bill, it's a resolution to Congress asking them to let states have the freedom to decide if they're going to transport and process horses into meat and other products. What happened in this country 2 years ago is the last three meat processing plants for horses closed. And that cut the price of horse meat or live horses in half at least. and without the option of processing unwanted horses in country, they started to be exported to Mexico and Canada for processing. Now, you've got a handout on your desk that I put passed out. It's got a horse on the front. The title of this front page says, "What should we do with all the unwanted horses?" And in there, there's a copy of the resolution. But if you look on page 4, there's a list of organizations that support this resolution. And the first one on the list is the National Council of State Legislatures, then the Midwest Council of State Governments, the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association, the American Veterinary Medical Association, the Minnesota Association of Equine Practitioners, the American Association of Equine Practitioners, the Minnesota Farm Bureau, the Minnesota Farmers Union, Minnesota Grain and Feed Association, American Quarter Horse Association, Minnesota Horse Council, and the Minnesota Livestock Breeders Association. And then if you turn the page to page 5, you'll see an expanded list of supporting organizations, because this is an issue that's being debated across this country. And I believe this list is only half here. I got it from a Wyoming state legislator who's working on this issue. And you'll see that on page 5, the list of supporting organizations starts with A and ends with N. So that's only part of the alphabet, so there must be another part of this list. But the ones I've got on this list is another 112 organizations supporting this resolution. And again, what we're doing is we're asking the U.S. Congress to let the states have the freedom to start horse processing plants, to transport horses for slaughter, if they so choose. Last year, the U.S. Congress, U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee passed a bill out of their committee that would prohibit the transport of horses for the purposes of processing slaughter, either in country or out of country. And we don't want them to do that again and maybe get the bill to pass all the way. So please support this resolution. Let the states have the freedom to decide this issue. And the livestock industry, the horse industry, broadly supports this legislation.
Further discussion on Senate File 133. Seeing none, Senator Dill renews his motion that this committee do arise. Senate File 133 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Remaining on general orders, number 68 on general orders, Senate File 798, Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 798 be recommended to pass.
Senator Betzel, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chair, members, we had a discussion on this bill last night. I'll just briefly remind you that this deals with striking a provision in law dealing with attorney's fees for the equal access to justice law. That is a law that allows people that if they bring a lawsuit against government regulations, regulatory agencies, and they are successful in doing so, that they can be awarded their attorney's fees. However, the attorney's fees were set back in the 1980s, and they are capped off at $125 an hour, which is an unreasonable amount today, so that if somebody is trying to bring a legitimate claim, many lawyers will not consider looking at it. Senator Reutman was talking last night about a possible amendment and just trying to cap it off, and we've had discussions since then. And also, the intervening hours gave us a chance to just double-check it. As I indicated, the amount of attorney's fees would be reasonable. They have to be awarded in the determination of the court. Just to give you an idea, the highest amount of attorney's fees, if you're talking to somebody who is a highly specialized lawyer in the environmental law area, that attorney would charge about $350 an hour. Now, that's really probably the top end in the metro area. But I think that if we just go forward with the bill as it is, as I say, I think there's sufficient controls on it. Senator Ortman has indicated that she's not going to pursue an amendment at this time. So I do stand for any questions and appreciate your support of the bill.
Okay, further discussion on Senate File 798. Seeing none, Senator Betzel renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 798 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill, we'll do that. On the calendar, or general orders, I should say, is number one on general orders, Senator, House File 348, Senator Anderson. Are you ready to go, Senator Anderson, or would you like a minute? Senator Pogermiller is ready. Senator Pogermiller, let's let Senator Anderson breathe for a minute. She just got up here. We'll go to number 71 on general orders, which is Senate File 182, Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, thank you. Members, I move when this committee do arise, Senate File 182 be recommended to pass.
Okay. Senator Pogermiller, discussion on your bill.
Mr. President, Senate File 182 is based on recommendations of the Redistricting Reform Panel Commission out of the Humphrey Institute that Vice President Mondale, former Governors Carlson and Quay, former Majority Leader Roger Moe, and former Secretary of State Joan Groh sat on and recommended. This bill is about improving the process by which we redraw legislative and congressional district maps. The bill has two components. The first is, which I believe is the most important, is to put in statute the basic redistricting principles that should be used in terms of population, in terms of communities of interest, and so forth, that have been built up over the years by the courts and by legislatures that are kind of the good government principles for redistricting. That's the, to me, a key part of this proposal, to get those principles in law. And these principles remove kind of the bald partisanship and that can take place in redistricting. The second part of the bill creates a balance between maintaining constitutional authority of the legislature to do redistricting, but this sets in place a five-judge, retired judge panel that would draw the initial maps. The judges would be appointed by each caucus of the legislature, by the leaders of each caucus, and they then would choose a fifth judge to help chair the commission. The commission then would draw maps, presuming they drew a map that was accepted to the legislature, we would pass that and the governor would sign it. If we failed to pass the first map that they drew, they would draw a second map, and the legislature would either vote up or down on that map and try to get a governor's signature. If that failed, there would be a third map that the legislature could either pass or amend to try to get the governor's signature. Based on my experience in redistricting, my sense is that this panel would draw a map that would be acceptable to the legislature, either on that first or second try, and then we probably could avoid some very typical court actions related to the drawing of the maps. I would urge members to support this. I think it's your basic good government bill. It's not perfect. There's no perfect way to do this, but I do think it would take some of the feeling of partisanship out of the redistricting process, and I think citizens of the state would appreciate that, and it would, in addition, probably mean that less time would be spent during the legislative session dealing with the redistricting process. Stand for questions.
Discussion on the motion. Senator Pogermiller, Senator Roble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pogermiller, yield.
He will yield.
Senator Pogermiller, because you have these prioritized, and I'm wondering, it kind of troubles me that communities of interest is pretty much at the bottom of the list. They're number eight out of a list of nine different principles for redistricting. And I'm wondering why they're down as low as they are, because I thought it was always the priority of the legislature when they were redistricting to try and keep communities of interest together. And that would mean that number seven, which is counties, cities, and towns, that's number seven, and then communities of interest is number eight, that they seem kind of low on the list. And I just thought, it's hard to carve up cities or townships And I would think we wouldn't want to do that, put half of a township in one legislative district and another in the other. I think it should always be a high priority to keep them together.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Senator Roebling, I think if you notice the principles, the first ones are the ones that are kind of constitutionally or court-ordered principles: nesting, equal population, contiguity, compactness, numbering, minority representation. Those have been things that have been dealt very specifically all over the country in terms of constitutional issues and court principles. Then you get into the kind of the first principle that some states work with and others don't, is the issue of political subdivisions. That then becomes the first priority, community of his interest after that, political competitiveness third. And I think the key thing to understand is everything above political subdivisions are things that are very, very boilerplate all over the country. And the courts are very interested in all of that. And so you need to deal with those issues first and then deal with your local boundaries. Keep in mind that you can never do all of these principles individually because sometimes they're in conflict with each other. There are instances where communities of interest are slight, or political subdivisions are different than communities of interest. And so depending on what kind of community you're in, you would split. For example, in the inner cities, you could maintain the Minneapolis border, but there may be a community of interest around St. Louis Park in Minneapolis, for example, that seems at this time to have a higher priority than that political border, because you do have to split the border somewhere. So this is a balancing act between the criteria, and I think the order that they're in is probably dictated in large part by these constitutional issues.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Pogermiller renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 182 be recommended.
Mr. President, I'm sorry.
Before that, I'm sorry. Maybe I moved too fast.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pogermiller, would you yield for a question?
He will yield.
Senator Pogermiller, some of us don't get into this very deeply, but I'm aware that the legislature would normally be the body to do redistricting, but frankly, it seemed more often than not it's gone to the Supreme Court. Can you just maybe just cover a little bit what their process is when they are delegated this duty?
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Senator Senjum, they're never really delegated the responsibility. They only intervene under two circumstances. One is a failure of the legislature and the governor to enact a plan, which has been the case over the years, because if you don't have a governor of the same party, that would have been the situation when you had a Democratic legislature and a Republican governor a few years ago, or the situation where you had a Republican House and a Democratic Senate. So there is a point in time where the courts have to intervene to just get the maps done so you can hold the election. That's one instance where the courts get involved. Secondly, the courts get involved if there are lawsuits filed over constitutional issues. And typically there are those lawsuits filed over minority representation and so forth. So when the courts, what has been the pattern in Minnesota, when the courts get involved, typically what happens with the state court is that, and there have been disputes between whether the federal courts or the state courts have jurisdiction. And in a failure of the legislature and the governor to get a map, it's commonly understood that the state courts have the first bite at the apple. And so what happens is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court typically appoints a three-judge panel to do the redistricting. That's what's happened in the past. They don't have to do that. They could have the Supreme Court do it if they chose to. But typically what has happened is the Chief Judge picks a three-judge panel. And in the past, that has historically been appellate and district court judges. It has not been Supreme Court judges. But again, they can do what they want, the courts, and but that's been the pattern around the country. The lawsuits that are filed on Voting Rights Act and so forth, those are typically in the federal courts, and typically what happens there is the 8th District appoints a 3-judge panel of federal judges to deal with those issues. And in the end, what happens is someone can press this all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which was the case in the 1980 redistricting, and the determination then is decided by the courts.
Okay. Any further discussion, Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will the majority leader yield for another question?
He will yield. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Pogemiller. Under Section 2 here, I'm wondering, are you changing the representation on the commission or how the commission is appointed from what is current law?
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, this commission doesn't exist. This creates the commission, so we're not changing it. This is what the proposal was by the, I believe, by the Humphrey Group. They wanted us to do it with judges, retired judges.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, I'll rephrase my question. Is it different than the process of appointment in the commission membership from the last redistricting?
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, there was not a commission. There has not been a commission. This is a new commission. There has not been one of these. So it's not different from the previous process because there was not one.
Okay, any further discussions? Senator Sedgham.
Mr. President, maybe just a comment, and I'm not sure if the majority leader wants to comment back, but you know, assuming that most of the time, if we have somewhat of a divided government, the decision on redistricting is going to go into the courts. I just have a feeling that a sitting judge does not carry as bright, if you will, a political stripe than maybe a retired judge who is more able to perhaps exercise political thought and opinion. I don't know, Senator Pogemiller, if you have any thoughts like that or not.
Senator Pogemiller.
I think, Senator Sedgham, I guess the feeling of the, you can never totally take the politics out of this with a small p. There's always, everybody has an opinion and everybody has kind of small p political opinions. And I think the feeling of the commission out of the Humphrey was that retired judges was the best bet because they're free of they're at a point in their career where they can look at the long-term interest of the state. And one of the points in this bill is that they have to be a retired judge who was not never held a political partisan office, either as an elected official or as a party officer. And so this is an attempt to take as much of the politics out as possible, but I think we all have to understand that you never can totally get the politics out of this. There's always some politics.
Okay, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, yeah, redistricting has been an issue, and every now and again it does get thrown into the courts because there's not a consensus agreement amongst the players. But this is a function of the legislature, not the judicial branch. This is a function of the legislature. That's us, not the judicial branch. Mr. President, I move that Senate File 182 be put on the table.
What do we do? I've been told that we can't table a bill that's on general orders, so we have to I believe vote it down if it was he could strike it.
Mr. President, I impose a call of the Senate.
Pardon? another weekend.
Okay, that's fine, because I'm Irish. I can talk all day until everybody comes back. Mr. President, this is a very important piece of legislation, and I believe strongly that the legislative branch has given up enough of their authority in the 17 years that I've been here, and we got to stop the bleeding. There is a reason why in the Constitution of the state of Minnesota that this provision was given to the legislature. It's called balance of power. This upsets the apple cart. This is a decision that we should be making. We hold election certificates. We were told by the people. This takes it out of our hands. It takes it out of elected members' hands. It takes it out of the voice of the people of the state of Minnesota and gives it to five people who are picked by three people. Members, I believe this is the wrong direction. The wrong direction. Now, there's a lot of things that are happening in our state with population. There's going to be a lot of changes in the districts going forward in the future. Congressional districts, our own Senate districts, the House districts. The map is going to look entirely different. Now, members, we are a political body. There's Democrats, Republicans, and I think everybody probably has a good mix of independent streak amongst everyone here. That's a good thing. We need to debate this proposal. We need to debate redistricting every chance that we get the opportunity. It's only once every 10 years. It's not that hard to draw up these lines and move to a consensus agreement when people are willing to sit down and honestly negotiate. Now, we just went through a process with the transportation bill, both of them, where we had long standing disagreements with the executive branch on the proper spending of transportation dollars, on the proper usage of our government workers in the area of transportation. And we have fought over them long and hard over months and months, and we finally reached an agreement. Members, we can reach an agreement on a redistricting plan. Would it be hard? Yes. But most good things that happen in life have a degree of difficulty. And I've always maintained that the more difficult it is, in the end, you come out with a better product. Members, we're elected. We hold election certificates for a reason, and that's to make decisions. This is a critical decision for the future of our state, and I don't think that we need it to have a panel of five unelected judges or non-elected judges, people who are appointed by folks who are the legislative leaders, I don't believe is a good plan. Members, I would ask not only for a roll call on this, but members, I'm going to continue to get up and keep talking until everybody comes here to vote on this.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, I think Senator Murphy is incorrect about a basic premise here. This does not remove the authority from the legislature, which is a constitutional prerogative. This says that that no redistricting plan becomes the plan unless the House and the Senate pass it and the governor signs it. All this says is that the a group of people who are appointed by four, not three, four, House majority, House minority, Senate majority, Senate minority, and then they pick a fifth person, those four. They do the initial drawing of a map that gets presented to the legislature and voted up or down. If that map is not accepted by the legislature and the governor, they do a second map and it's voted up or down and signed or not signed by the governor. If neither of those work, they do a third map and the legislature can accept that map or change that map. and then get into the process that Senator Murphy believes is the better process. The history in the state has been that the legislature has not been able to get into law a map with a gubernatorial signature, regardless of the political makeup of the legislature and the gubernatorial office. And the courts then do step in, and the courts do draw the map. The maps we are currently living under are court-drawn maps. And so this is an attempt to have legislatively accepted maps passed by the legislature, and it seems the best way to get there is to have a process on the front end where it appears to be fair as possible, doesn't totally remove politics, but creates a fairness situation where legislators then can make the judgment, is this a fairly drawn map based on this criteria? And again, I want to point out that one of the key features here is putting this criteria into the statute, which would then drive the map drawing. So I respectfully disagree with Senator Murphy. This does not take away the legislative prerogative. I think it streamlines the legislative prerogative.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, Senator Pogemiller made the best argument for not voting for this bill, and that's because the judges get to put together maps and then they send them over to us. We get to look at them. You know, we don't get to comment on it. We don't get to change the map. We get to vote it up or down. So there is no decision-making there other than, well, this map stinks, in the words of Don Shelby. This map stinks. I'm not going to vote for it. Or this map's good. I like it. I'll vote for it. But until we do that two times and get back to the third one, we don't really have input other than yes or no. Now, I don't think that that's a very good, I don't think it's a workable solution, members, and I would move to strike Senate File 182 from General Orders and refer it back to the Committee on Rules.
On the motion, roll call. It'll be a roll call, Senate. Senator Murphy's moving to move Senate File 182 on General Orders, number 71 on General Orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. That's the vote. Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted. All senators having voted. There's desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 19 ayes, 39 nays, the motion does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 182. Senator Poe, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't believe that Senator Murphy and I have agreed on much this year. But we agree today. I'm not sure why, as a legislature, we continue to give our authority and power away. I'm not sure why we would turn our authority to do redistricting on its head and give it to the courts first. Normally, we do the redistricting, and if we can't come up with a plan or it doesn't meet the constitutional requirements, then the court tells us and we come up with another plan. And I think that's a really important process because then it means that we're talking. The minority members and the majority members, we talk about our districts. We talk with each other. It's a very important process that we negotiate. And when you take those discussions and negotiations away from senators, we defeat some of the very important work that we do to understand our state and to bring relevance to our redistricting plan. And I hope that members would vote down this bill at this point. We don't need to do this now. There's plenty of time before redistricting. We don't have to rush this bill. It hasn't really had an opportunity to be seen and reviewed properly for such an important matter, and I would hope that we would not pass this bill today.
Further discussion? But a roll call requested. There will be a roll call. Secretary will take the roll. Senators should be voting. All senators, having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 31 ayes, 24 nay, the motion is adopted. Okay, the next general orders bill is number 21 on general orders, Senate file 745, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 745 be recommended to pass.
Senator Rest, discussion on your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 745 changes the process for filling a vacancy in nomination. For example, when a candidate on the general election ballot dies between the primary and the general election. The change is needed to meet a requirement with the Federal HAVA Act, which requires the use of accessible voting equipment in elections, and it is not possible to reprogram it after the primary. So the requirement then is a special election be held when there is a vacancy in nomination for a partisan candidate, and that otherwise the current statutes continue as applied to nonpartisan candidates. The bill indicates that there would be a special election the first Tuesday in December if the candidate had died, and any votes that had been counted previously to that, like for absentee ballots, would just be null and void. All other candidates who had been on the general election ballot for that office would remain on the ballot for the general election, and it would be up to the parties, because these are for partisan elections, it would be up to the parties to to select the method by which they would have a candidate replace a candidate on that special election ballot. People who had voted absentee in the general election would be automatically sent a ballot for the special election without having to make an additional application. Otherwise, the current law for nonpartisan candidates would hold, and there would be no change in the ballot. And if the person who is was not removed from the ballot prevails, and the race would be won by that person. If the person whose name, let's say somebody died, was not on the nonpartisan races, got more votes, then that would just simply be a vacancy in office, and the current statutes would apply just like for any other vacancy, like a city council member resigns and city councils appoint someone to fill out the term. This is only to meet the HAVA requirements with regards to the use of accessible voting equipment in elections.
Further discussion on Senate File 745. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rest, I just wanted to ask a question. We had some discussion about this bill, and a question came up, and none of us knew the answer. But if an election in a contest that was going on, and one of the candidates at the end of the election cycle did some polling and determined that he was likely to lose, and then could he orchestrate some sort of a mechanism by which he would be declared incapable of standing for election and, in effect, delay that election, give his friends or his political party an opportunity to choose another candidate? Is that kind of thing contemplated in this bill as being prohibited?
Mr. Chairman, it certainly is. And in Section 7 of the bill, the requirements, other than obviously if someone has died, are that the candidate has a catastrophic illness that was diagnosed after the deadline for withdrawal, and that the candidate's illness will permanently and continuously incapacitate the candidate and prevent the candidate from performing the duties of the office sought. That has to be provided in an affidavit, and it has to be accompanied by a certificate verifying that the candidate's illness meets the requirements of this clause, signed by at least two licensed physicians. Madam Chair, I sound for any other questions.
Any further discussion? Senator Rust renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 745 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is passed. There being no further discussion, we are now, let's see, Senator Dahl. Senate File 767.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 767 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dahl has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 767 be recommended to pass. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This is a a cleanup bill on the from the Metropolitan Council on providing some provisions to kind of streamline some of the land planning, land use plans that municipalities must submit every 10 years to make it a little simpler for everyone and speed up the process. Basically, what we're doing is, first of all, reducing the amount of time that a governmental unit adjacent to one that's submitting a plan has to review and comment on their neighboring community's plans from 6 months down to 90 days, so splitting that in half. And then allowing municipalities also to use a executive summary if they currently have a land water management plan on file with the Metropolitan Council. And that's basically the bill. I'll stand for any questions. Thank you. I appreciate your support.
Any questions for Senator Dahl? There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senate File 767. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is passed. Call on Senator Pappas, Senate File 837.
Madam Chair, I request progress.
Senator Pappas requests progress on her bill. Senator Rust.
Madam Chair, the bill is...
Senator
I know,
Rust.
I know, it's just not up there. It's 519.
House File 519.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that when this committee do arise at House File 519 be recommended to pass.
Any discussion? Senator Rust, discuss your bill.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, House File 519, Senate File 747, is the work of the past 2 years dealing with issues concerning non-conforming lots on non-conforming shoreland lots. Since 1972, the rules that currently exist have recognized that non-conforming lots of record may be developed if they are in separate ownership and they have to meet certain requirements such as sewage treatment and setback. Since 1989, the rules have required contiguous non-conforming lots under a common ownership to be combined to create one or more conforming lots insofar as it is practicable. Over the last 4 years, non-conforming lot issues have been brought to the attention of the legislature, and a commitment was made to the respective state and local government operations committees to, quite frankly, stop the fighting and to meet the interested parties, to meet and develop alternative strategies for addressing shoreland nonconforming issues, lot issues. A study group was formed, and there were requested specific case examples from lot owners to be brought to this study group from which they could make recommendations on how to solve those issues. And based on the set of examples that were submitted, the set of standards was developed for several categories of nonconforming lots, that is, singly, contiguous with dwellings, and for nonconforming structures in the shore impact zone. There was only one example that confounded the study group in terms of coming up with a proposal to deal with it. There were recommendations that were developed that include requiring structures located closer than one-half the lake or river setback to be moved away from the water, if possible, when replaced after being destroyed. Further, there would be allowed development on single nonconforming lots without regard to size, provided that certain conditions were met. Next, development would be allowed on contiguous nonconforming lots, that is, at least one lot without a dwelling, if the lots were at least two-thirds of the minimum shoreline lot size standard. There's a lot of detail in these standards, but they did seem to meet the concerns of those lot owners that contacted the study group. The new language would apply in cities, township, and counties. Flexibility of local units to impose more restrictive size standards for when development or sale is allowed has been removed in this bill. A major issue identified in the study process concerned the continuing sale of nonconforming lots to unsuspecting buyers. And initially, the recommendation was to amend the statute to require disclosure from a seller, but that language has also been deleted, and the realtor's disclosure form that is currently used by licensed realtors in the state would be amended to include a checklist identifying a nonconforming lot. There was consensus reached with the work group, except for some concerns that still remain by the builders who were interested in increasing the setback. So that is the bill, and I stand for questions insofar as I am able to provide answers.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A50 amendment.
Senator Bach has the A50 amendment.
Madam Chair, members, what the amendment does is that in the event a municipality
Senator Bach, excuse me for a moment. Secretary will record the amendment.
Senator Bach moves to amend House File 519 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 7th as follows. Page 5 after line 12, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, what the amendment does is puts a time limit on the period of time that a person has to appeal a district court decision. Under current law, if some person feels aggrieved by a local government decision, and they have a venue to go to district court, and then if the municipality prevails in district court, there is no time limit under which the individual can make an appeal. So all the amendment does is says that if the municipality prevails in district court, it puts a 60-day window on the time that an individual can make the appeal. That's the extent of it.
Senator Ress.
Madam Chair, the body can decide whether to accept the amendment or not. It does not affect the, as far as I understand, affect the study group's agreement and recommendations for the shoreline lots issues.
Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that pursuant to Rule 41.2 that I be excused from voting on all questions pertaining to House File Number 519.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is passed. Back on Senator Bach's amendment. Any further discussion? All right, Senator Bach moves to amend. Hearing no further questions, the question occurs on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Senator Roebling.
Madam Chair, I have the A2 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A2 amendment.
Senator Roebling moves to amend House File 519 as amended pursuant to Rule 49 adopted by the Senate May 7th as follows. Page 2, line 2. This is Amendment A-2.
Senator Roebling, on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment was adopted in the House on this bill and kind of resulted in unanimous support. One of the things that concerns me about the current bill is that it could put property owners in quite a pickle. It says that if your cabin or your residence that might be out of conformance with the shoreland ordinances is destroyed by 50% or more, that if it's at all practicable, you would have to move it back to put it into conformance. And it may not be practical, so you may be able to leave it on its current footprint, but there's another issue here with that 50% or more. I spoke with some insurance agents, and they told me that if a place is destroyed 55%, they would typically have you repair it, not give you the full amount that you would need to build it on another footprint on the same lot. But this provision that the House put in just said that it's changing the must, that they must do it, move it into conformance, to a may, so there would be some local discretion with the local authorities, and that it also would have to be something that the land or the property owner would agree with. And we've spoken with Senator Rest a little bit about this. You didn't know about it? Oh, okay. And she was aware that I think that the House put it on. But anyway, I'm urging members to support this because otherwise the property owner could find themselves in a real financial dilemma. And if it's something that they agree to and they want to rebuild and move back further so maybe they can expand the footprint so they could build a bigger place, that's fine. But to say that they had to move back and their insurance might not even pay for the cost of replacing it, say if the roof is torn off by a tornado and the windows are all in, it might be 55% loss. But the insurance company wants to put a new roof on and replace the windows. And we're saying in this proposal that Senator Rest has, nope, you got to move it. Got to move it so it's in conformance. And so I think that it's better to have some agreement, some local discretion on this whole process. And I hope you'll support it.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, I'm very opposed to the amendment. The first part of it is fine, changing the must to may and maybe to are in both of those instances. But what this bill and this represents is 2 years of negotiating with all of the interests that care about shoreland lots. The homeowners, the property owners, the local governments, environmentalist concerns, and the DNR. And what this amendment would do would be to make that balance lopsided in favor of the property owner by saying that only if that person agreed in writing to the disposition could any action move forward. And I think that that puts too much authority on with the property owner. And so although I don't object again to the must and may, I do object to lines 1.6 and line 1.6, 1.7, and 1.10, and 1.11. And I would ask members to vote no.
Any further discussion on the A2 amendment? Senator Roebling.
I'm just looking out for property owners here. I think a lot of them may want to move their building to be in conformance, because if they stay on the current site, they cannot expand it or do anything different to it, really. They could, I mean, under current law anyway, they could just repair it. But this would say you can't repair it. You've got to move it if you can. And I'm just saying that it's just going to place a significant hardship on some property owners.
Further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, the question occurs on Senator Roebling's A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion does not prevail. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I repressed progress temporarily.
The bill will be progressed. Senator Pogemiller.
Madam Chair, I move the committee do now rise and report.
Senator Pogemiller has moved that the committee do now rise and report. All those in favor by the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. Senate will come to order.
Madam President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails.
Madam President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Madam President, I would like to add one more bill to consider on general orders today. It's number 94 on the general orders calendar, Senate file 1219. It deals with licensure of full-time firefighters. And so I'd ask, I move to waive the lie-over for number 94, Senate file 1219 on general orders.
On the Pogemiller motion to waive the lie-over, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Madam President, I would move that the remaining on motions, I would move that the Senate do now resolve itself into committee of the whole for purpose of taking up the general orders calendar.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I would, is the committee in order?
Yes, committee's in order.
Madam Chair, I would add number 94, Senate file 1219, to the list, and would then yield to Senator Rest. Thank you for progressing. And then once those bills are completed, I don't know if we're coming back to the Anderson bill or not. Are you doing? Okay, but if you can get the Anderson bill taken care of and the rest of these bills plus the new addition 1219, then we could come out of committee of the whole, recess, and then if members would hang around, there may be a conference committee report or two that we want to vote on this afternoon, but we won't run it. We'll let you know within an hour or so whether we need people to stick around or whether just a skeleton crew. So
skeleton
crew. So I yield to Senator Rest.
Senator Rest.
Chair, I move that when this committee do arrive, that House File 519 be recommended to pass.
Senator Rest moves that House File 519 be recommended to pass. Further discussion? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A51 amendment.
Senator Roebling has the A51 amendment. The secretary will record the amendment.
Senator Roebling moves to amend House File 519 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 7th as follows. Page 2, line 1. This is amendment A51.
Senator Roebling moves to amend House File 519. Further discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You heard me mention before that if a building was destroyed by 50% or more, it says in the current bill, then it would have to move back to be in conformance if it was all at all practicable. What I'm trying to do is amend that 50% to 75%, which would create less of a hardship on the property owners, especially if their insurance would not cover rebuilding the building in the conforming area. Because if it was destroyed 51% or 52% and the insurance company simply wanted to repair it, but the DNR is now saying, no, you can't just repair it. You have to move it back into conformance, which means you start a whole new building, foundation and everything. And then you have to bear the cost of part of that reconstruction yourself because your insurance is not going to pay for it. And so I'm saying it should be at least 75% destroyed before we would require them to leave their current footprint and move into it. We talk all the time about saving construction materials and recycling and reusing. Then why would we say that someone's cabin that is destroyed 52% couldn't be repaired and would have to be rebuilt? Especially if it's been sitting on that lot in that location for years, how much more damage is it going to do to the environment just to have it rebuilt there or repaired right there? And so I'm just thinking this is a practical position. 50% does not seem like it would be an adequate amount to require somebody to move something when it could be repaired. So please, let's use some common sense here. I know that Senator Ress is going to say that this will break the agreement, but how many of those property owners do you think were there working out this agreement? We're here to represent them, and so I hope you support this.
Senator Ress. I do oppose the amendment, and Senator Roebling took the words right out of my mouth. this is a very carefully weighed, balanced agreement or proposal that came from that study group where all the special interests were represented. And once again, I think when we start amending it after a really long and hard discussions over and over again, months of discussions, a couple of years of discussions, that the pendulum starts to swing away from balance, and I would ask members to reject the amendment.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. I voted with Senator Roebling on her initial amendment. I'm going to support this one. I think she's right. I wasn't part of this group that negotiated this. I think that we should be a little careful about what we're doing with these shorelands and the non-conforming lots. Some of these cabins have been there for generations, and I'm going to support Senator Roebling's effort here.
Is there further discussion? Senator Rest.
Chair, just to point out that 50% is part of the current law as well. I mean, there's additional permissive language with regard to solving the problems with nonconforming structures that are less than 50% when they are destroyed, that they cannot go further than 50% when they are replaced in terms of the setback. But this was an attempt to solve that issue, and again, I think that the moving it to 75% is not reasonable.
Is there further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, Senator Roebling renews her motion on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does not adopted. Division is called. All those in favor, please rise. Opposed, please rise. Didn't you? Sorry. Twenty-one opposed, 17-4. Motion is not adopted. Is there further discussion on House File 519? Seeing none, Senator Rust renews her motion to pass House File 519. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Next, Senator Rust, House File 1849.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When this committee do arise, I move that House File number 1849 as amended be recommended to pass.
Senator Rust.
Madam Chair, Senate File, House File 1849 was originally Senate File 1544 and was the local mandate relief bill that Senator Gerlach, Senator Lori, and I developed that later on became an article in Senate File 3 authored by Senator Berglund. In the Rules Committee, we picked the language back up again and brought Senate File 1544, now House File 1849, to the floor. I do have the A16 amendment, Madam Chair.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Rest moves to amend House File 1849 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 13th as follows. Page 2 after line 19, insert. This is Amendment A16.
Chair recognizes Senator Rust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A16 amendment puts the language that was in Article 5 of Senate File 3 into House File 1849 with two exceptions. One, a provision that had been added of Senator Anderson's is removed because it's now part of another bill that is moving forward. And then in addition, another section in the underlying bill was removed that deals with the cost of proceedings on ballot questions. And that bill, that provision was addressed in the State Department's bill in terms of the funding, and we will deal with the policy issue next year. And I would stand for questions on the amendment.
Is there discussion? Hearing none, Senator Rust renews her motion on the A16. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A50 amendment.
Secretary will record the amendment.
I did. Yeah, I said it.
Senator Vandeveer moves to amend House File 1849 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 13th as follows. Page 4, after line 22, insert. This is Amendment A50.
The chair recognizes Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this amendment simply reduces from 500 to 400 the required number of newspapers distributed to qualify as to print as a qualified newspaper to print public notices. Appreciate your support.
Senator
Chair,
Rest.
The amendment is acceptable.
Senator Vandeveer moves the amendment, moves to amend House File 1849. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, the question occurs on Senator Russ, House File 1840. Oh, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an amendment that's in the works. It's just not quite ready to be addressed.
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, before I would request progress, Senator Lynch, I'd like to know what the subject matter is and whether it's friendly to the bill or not.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Rest. The amendment contains the health mandate provisions. They are the provisions that were included and passed by this body in Senate File 3. And I have concern about Senate File 3 being matched up. And so I thought that this might be a good opportunity to incorporate that Senate position into this so that we can complete our work on these mandates.
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, although I am not unsympathetic, I think with regard to this bill, since it started out as local government mandates only on a very limited matter, that it would not bringing in the health care ones, since this is not an omnibus bill like Senator Berglund's was, would not be germane. So, Madam Chair, I would renew my motion to that House File 1849 be recommended pass.
Senator Rest renews her motion. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Rest. I just, for further consideration, there are a number. In fact, I would say the majority of the provisions contained in the health mandate legislation were brought to us and have direct impacts to our counties. And that it was because of the counties in working with Mike and AMC on the heart of what's contained in would be contained in the amendment that I look to your bill as a possible vehicle, and was thinking that you might, I was hoping you'd be open to that suggestion.
Madam Chair, I will let Senator Lynch make her arguments. I request progress, but I'm going to argue against doing it. But she can make her arguments when her amendment is ready, as long as it's coming quickly.
Senator Rest moves.
I request progress.
Senator Rest. The bill will be progressed. Senator Torres Ray, Senate File 1509.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope this. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1509 be recommended to pass.
Senator Torres Ray moves that when this committee do arise, House File 1849 be recommended to pass. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 1509 is a technical bill. It's a DHS bill about child care programs and program integrity. Article 1 of this bill modifies, it's a very technical bill to putting the state in compliance with regulations at the federal level. Article 1, Section 1, modifies the definition of application to include a child care addendum form in combination with the application form. Section 2 requires the commissioner to make monthly payments instead of the quarterly payments. And again, this is to line up with federal payments. Section 3 clarifies that child care assistance eligibility is for household incomes with incomes less than or equal to 67%. Section 4 provides that all changes to child care parent fees must be implemented on the first Monday. Section 5 updates that the provider payments reflect changes in the statewide payment system and clarifies county and state responsibilities. Section 6 requires the commissioner to make monthly payments to each county based on direct service expenditures. Section 7 modifies family and child care eligibility for school readiness services. That's Article 1. Article 2 is about program integrity. Section 1 allows the state to charge a county for development and operating costs incurred by a computer system for functions requested by the county. Section 2 makes overpayments for state-funded medical assistance and state-funded medical Minnesota care a judgment by operation of law. Section 3 allows overpayment judgments to be renewed by service of notice. And Article 3 has modifies three sections. Sections 1 and 2 modify the general assistance chapter of law. It's just an update of terms and standards. Section 3 eliminates the need to reconcile child foster care providers. And Section 4 makes technical changes to update the location for a foster care provider. So, Madam Chair, again, these are all technical amendments that were recommended by the Department of Human Services to put the state in compliance with federal regulations. And I stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Moore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the Sixth Amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Moore moves to amend Senate File 1509 as follows. Page 1 after line 11, insert. This is Amendment A-6.
Madam Chair, members, in full disclosure, the A6 amendment is the amendment that I tried to put onto my own bill last night that failed on a Germanus rule, and I'm going to try again today. I have, as I've done before, Madam Chair, have asked counsel to help me look at this to make sure that it is germane to the underlying bill. The A6 amendment is the resource mapping bill that I have passed through the division and came out of finance the other day. The reason why we need to get this through is simply only because in the House or the other body, its companion is caught up in the Finance Committee, and it could not be liberated from the Finance Committee because they will not be having any more meetings. And so since we've had a tremendous amount of work done on this, the Department of Finance and the Department of Admin has given input. They asked for this to be a pilot project so that they could test the robustness of our new budgeting system. The intent is that if this works, the Commission of Finance is going to come back with some recommendations on how else we can do this in other budget areas. And in particular, we're looking at this to test our ability to track the federal stimulus dollars that by federal law we have to be able to track in terms of its job creation. So this is a pilot project with respect to federal and state funding for children and youth, but it is actually going to test the robustness of our budgeting system, and I ask for your support.
Okay, we're on the A6, Senator Moi amendment. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do support the amendment.
Okay. On that A6 Moi amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Any further discussion on Senate File 1509? Seeing none, Senator Torres-Ray moves that this committee to arise. Senate File 1509 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, House File 348 be recommended to pass.
Senator Anderson, tell the committee about your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill went through Judiciary Committee, and it relates to the ability of someone who has a law license and practices usually part-time as an attorney to be able to also be a sheriff's deputy. There's a very, very old law on the books that prohibits that for sheriffs and sheriff's deputies, and we have limited it to deputy sheriffs who are acting under the authority of the appointing sheriff. I do have an amendment. I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the Anderson A1 amendment.
Senator Anderson moves to amend House File 348 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate May 11th as follows, page 1, line 13. This is amendment A-1.
Senator Anderson, on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment makes some changes that were requested by the Bar Association to be explicitly clear. We had a lot of discussion in committee about how to ensure that there weren't any conflicts between one job and the other job, and we wanted to make sure that in the original language you see in the bill that the sheriff had discretion to make sure there was no problem with the individual fulfilling their responsibilities as a sheriff. But this additional language from lines 1.4 to 1.6 makes it clear that there cannot be a material nexus or any kind of connection between the law enforcement duties and any potential legal proceedings that the individual would be involved in as an attorney. There's also an immediate effective date. And this bill came about because of a constituent that came to me with this problem who, at the time he brought it to me, was a law student. He's now a practicing attorney. It turns out that he's not the only one in this situation who has been working part-time as a deputy sheriff, now has a law degree, and wants to make sure he's not violating any laws. And it turns out that this is a law that hasn't been enforced, and I think it's a good idea to update it so that people won't accidentally be violating the law. And this puts standards in place to make sure that it will happen in a way that protects the public interests of all involved. I would move the A1 amendment.
On discussion on the A1 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill. Did you pretty much describe the... Okay. Senator Anderson renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate House File 348 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that what was the number? House File
1849 is?
Is that it? 1849? No, the one I was just doing.
Oh, okay. That's
House File 1849, the one dealing with the mandate, be recommended to pass.
Okay, Senator Rest, did you already explain it? Weren't we waiting for a lynch?
No, that will not be forthcoming, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, you explained the bill already before. Anybody need any more explanation? Mm-hmm. Senator Ress renews her motion that when this committee do arise, House File 1849 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. What do we got left? The next bill on general orders this afternoon, number 92 on general orders, Senate File 1235, Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when this committee do arise that Senate File 1235 be recommended to pass.
Okay, Senator Marty, discussion on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill that came out of some good efforts of the city of Minneapolis. I know some other communities are doing similar things to try and address youth violence, and we're trying to see it as a public health issue that can be prevented. City of Minneapolis and, again, some other communities have tried similar things where they try and bring everyone together in a collaborative effort, the schools, law enforcement, community groups, and work together to establish violence prevention programs. This legislation spells out the types of things that are included in the programs, and the goal is to try and expand these ideas around the state and also to help the programs to qualify, get federal funds and grant foundation grants to implement them. The department, the Commissioner of Health, would be required to do this if funds are available, and they would start by applying for federal funds that there are available to coordinate such efforts. I'd urge your support. I don't know of any opposition to this, and I've heard from a lot of other communities that are interested in this as well. Be happy to stand for questions.
Hey, further discussion on Senate File 1235. Seeing none, Senator Marty renews his motion when this committee do arise. Senate File 1235 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, with the next bill. Is it her bill? The next bill on general orders, number 94, Senate File 1219, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File number 1219 be recommended to pass.
Senator Rest, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, the Senate File 1219 is a proposal to set up licensing standards for Minnesota's firefighters, full-time firefighters. The it would take place in 2011. All those who are currently under appointment as full-time firefighter would be automatically licensed at that time. The licenses are good for 3 years. During which time, and for $75, and it is under the jurisdiction of the Fire Standards Board. During that time, there would need to be 72 hours of continuing professional training. Minnesota has 1,700 full-time firefighters. Those folks would be required to be licensed, and they would pay for it themselves. The 16,000 volunteer firefighters who are defined in the bill as less than full-time could apply for a firefighter license if they chose and then be covered by the same the same requirements, professional education, certification, testing, et cetera. This is a proposal that is supported by both the Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association and the volunteer firefighters, and I would request your support. And I know of no opposition.
Further discussion on Senate File 1219? Seeing none, Senator Ress renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 12, Senator Rosen before the vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Members, I rise in support of this bill. I think we had a very good discussion in the Public Safety Budget Committee about this. And in my perspective, coming from a rural area where we all have just volunteer firefighters, I believe that Senator Rest took all those issues at heart and really worked. She seems to be like the firefighter guru or something. Or something like that, but I do rise in support of this, and I think it's a very good bill. Thank you.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, I would point out that the language that is in the bill is the language that was modified in the Public Safety Conference Committee, and that's reflected in the language that is before us here on the floor. It's no different than what was there.
Okay, further discussion. Senator Ress renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1219 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
Okay, on the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Betzel. Senator Limmer, do you wish to address the...
Mr. President, are we on motions now?
Yeah, we're still on motions.
Mr. President, I move that an urgency be declared within the meaning of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to Senate File 1976, and that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give Senate File 1976 its third reading and place it on final passage.
Tell us what's the... explain where the bill is and what the bill's about.
The bill has not passed committee yet, Senator or Mr. President. This Senate File 1976... is relating to the Minnesota Constitution and proposing a question on the definition of marriage. And I will stand for questions, Mr. President.
Is the bill in committee?
Yes, Mr. President.
Okay, then I believe you need another motion to get it out of committee first. You want to get, is that his motion?
Mr. President, if you could give me some assistance on what that motion may be.
Well, we can do that. We'll get you the right motion.
Mr. President.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, due to other circumstances, I will withdraw this motion for the day.
Okay. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller has indicated that he requested that we take a brief recess for a couple of minutes. I'm not quite sure. And then we'll have a determination whether or not we have any other business to be done. We have some things at the desk. Well, why don't we process the business at the desk first?
Well, we'll process what's at the desk, Senator Betzel. Messages from the House.
First message is on Senate File 1331, Senator Sieben. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1331, a bill for an act relating to elections, moving the state primary from September to June and making conforming changes. Senate File 1331 is herewith return to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Seabed.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1331 and a conference committee of five members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Okay, on the Senator Siebel's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
The next message is on Senate File 1503, Senator Torres Ray. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1503, a bill for an act relating to human services, changing child welfare provisions. Senate File 1503 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate does not concur in the amendments with the House Senate File 1503 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed to the subcommittee and conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Okay, on the motion by Senator Torres Ray, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
The next message is on Senate File 722, Senator Kelash. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 722, a bill for an act relating to public safety, requiring that information on persons civilly committed, found not guilty by reason of mental illness or incompetent to stand trial, be transmitted to the Federal National Instant Criminal Background Check System. Senate File 722 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Kelash.
Mr. President, I move that Senate do not concur with the amendments of House by the House to Senate File 722 and that the conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of this Senate and act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Okay, on the Senator Kelash motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
The next message is on Senate File 1012, Senator Anderson. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 1012, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for environment and natural resources. Senate File 1012 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Vickerman for Senator Anderson. Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in amendments by the House of Senate File 1012 and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act like a conference committee appointed on a part of the House.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Continuing on messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House File 1529. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
First reading. To be referred. I'm going to read the title, okay.
House File 1529, a bill for an act relating to civil proceedings, removing a dollar limitation on attorney or agent fees in certain cases.
First reading. Refer to the Committees on Rules and Administration.
For comparison.
Without objection, pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Cohn moves that the following members be excused for conference committee at House Bill 1231 at 1:35 p.m. Senator Cohn, Anderson, Saxog, Chaudhry, and Frederickson. And pursuant to Rule number 12, Senator Anderson moves that the following members be excused for conference committee on Senate File 657 at 1:35 p.m. Senator Anderson, Pretner, Solon, Kubley, Dill, and Rummel. And pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Murphy moves that the following members be excused for conference committee on House Bill 928 from noon to 2 p.m. Senators Murphy, Dibble, Dahl, Day, and Sieben. And pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Clark moves that the following members be excused for conference committee on Senate File 489 at 3:10. Senator Phoebe, Clark, and Vandiver. On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I think we're done for the day, except for we need to appoint some conference committees. And since Senator Senjum and Clark are not here, I don't have a quorum of the conference committee appointing committee. So I think what we will do, if it's okay, is recess to the call of the chair, and a skeleton crew later this afternoon will appoint those conference committees. But there will be, right now at least, I don't believe there'll be any other votes today. So, and I can't imagine what it would cause that. We'll come back at noon tomorrow. There's always the outside chance something comes up, and we'll email everybody and give everybody a heads up in plenty of time if we had to come back today, but I don't believe we have to. So plan on noon tomorrow on the Senate floor, but we'll need a skeleton crew a little later to appoint those conference committees.
Hey,
and Mr. President, I just wanted to I was not in the room, and I understand that there was a motion to take up a bill out of a committee. And is that a bill that has not been able to get a hearing in the committee, if Senator Limmer would yield? Because I think I'd like to facilitate a hearing if possible.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, Senator Pogermiller, that has not had a hearing. It was introduced late in the session.
I see.
Very close to the deadline date. And so due to the timing of the introduction as well as the deadline, there was no hearing even requested.
So, Mr. President, Senator Limmer, was it introduced before or after the committee deadline?
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President and Senator Pogermiller, before the deadline.
Okay. And you say, Mr. President, you said you did not request a hearing?
Senator Limmer.
That's correct.
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, I take it now that you are requesting a hearing since you wanted to take it up on the Senate floor. Is that correct? You are requesting a hearing?
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, it doesn't matter to me where we have the hearing. I didn't think that in the nature of a few days left that we would have time to give a formal committee hearing and then have enough time to bring it to the Senate floor pending a passing vote in the committee.
And Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Senator Limmer, what committee are we talking about? Which committee is the bill in?
Senator Limmer.
Mr. President, I believe it's Judiciary Committee.
Okay. Mr. President, Senator Limmer, I will visit with the chair of that committee and see since that might be a better way to process the bill. But I'll check. I'm not even sure what the details of what the bill is. I just know that there was a request to hear a bill that had not been heard in committee, And you know, my preference is always, when I was a chair of a committee, I always like to hear the bills. And I think that would be a better process. So, but I'll talk with the chair of the committee and see what the situation is. So, Mr. President.
Before that, Senator Tomasoni, did you have a, okay, now, excuse me, Senator Pogermiller. Senator Moi.
Thank you, Mr. President. It is orange.
That's the important announcement. Okay.
Mr. President, then I would call for a recess to call the chair and...
Skeletons.
Skeleton.
Skeletons come back. The motion is to recess to the call of the chair. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess.
Mr. President. Oops. He's up there. Mr. President, he's there.
Okay. The Senate will come to order. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, are there any committee reports?
Without objection, we'll revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. There are three committee reports to be read.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate File 191, a bill for an act relating to retirement, various retirement plans, making various statutory changes. Reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass. And Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate File 1797, a bill for an act relating to education requiring the State Advisory Council on Early Childhood Education and Care to create an inventory of early childhood services, reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass. And Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred House File Number 925, a bill for an act relating to employment, regulating the dissemination and calculation of the state unemployment rate, reports the same back with recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports just read by the Secretary be now adopted.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. Motion prevails. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. Senate files 191 and 1797 are given their second reading. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. House file 925 is given a second reading.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
I'd move a brief recess for the purposes of appointing conference committees.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. Senate is in recess.
Mr. President.
Senate will come to order. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
The Secretary will read the privilege reports.
Senator Pogermiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 1331. Senators Sieben, Rest, Pappas, Higgins, and Bonhoff. On House File 2251, Senators Cohen, Clark, Berglund, Pappas, and Fredrickson. On House File 1760, Senators Lori, Marty, Higgins, Pretner, Solon, and Fischbach. On Senate File 1503, Senators Torres Ray, Moi, and Limmer. On Senate File 722, Senators Kielash, Moi, and Ingebrigtsen. And on Senate File 1012, Senators Anderson, Fredrickson, Vickerman, Chaudhry, and Parisot. Senator Pogermiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails.
Mr. President, any other work at the desk?
Without objection, the following members will be excused from parts of today's session. Senator Prettner-Solin all day, Senator Senjum from 2:30 to 3:05 p.m., Senator Rummel from noon until 1 p.m., Senator Sharon from 3:10 to the end, Senator Scheid from 3:15 till the end of session, Senator DeDill from 3:20 to the end of session, Senator Dahl, Jay Dahl, from 3:15 to the end of session, Senator Ortman from 2:30 to 3:05. Any other work? There is no other work at the desk.
Mr. President, then I would move the Senate adjourn till Friday, May 15th, 12 noon.
On the motion to adjourn until Friday, May 15th, 12 noon. All those in favor, please signify by saying
aye. Mr. President.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Senjum.
Senator Pogemiller, can you brief us at all on tomorrow? The vaguest way, if you have to.
Senator Senjum, there's miscellaneous general orders. We'll try to get a list. Do we have one prepared?
It's not
yet. So
not there's not that much left.
We'll get a list to you as soon as we're able to. There's not much left, really.
So, let me ask a question. Would the pension bills be something you might want to bring up tomorrow?
Would we have to waive a layover on that? No, so that's probably something we would take up tomorrow is the pension bill. That came out of rules today, out of finance today.
If it were special ordered, I just got a second reading today, so if it were special ordered, you could bring it
up. Okay, so we would have to figure out a way to process that, perhaps.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller, that's fairly complex. We'd probably want to caucus that one.
Okay.
I suspect it's somewhat complex. They always are.
Yes. We would accommodate that, obviously, so. Okay, then renew my motion.
On the motion to adjourn until Friday, May 15th at 12 noon, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned.